Hey, thank you to Helix for sponsoring this podcast. Adam has had his Helix mattress for almost a year now, and he's loving it. It's actually hard to get him up. In fact, he won't stop talking about it. You'll understand what we mean when he goes into detail. Thank you for the detail, Adam, later on the episode. But for now, we want to tell our listeners about a special deal going on. Our Sleepy Time Pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and, as if that's not enough, two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula. That's helixsleep.com/Paula. This is their best offer yet, and I'll bet it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
Ascertain?
Yes.
Okay. Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why do you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinephobe.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Coming to you live from the Ray Horseman Studio in North Hollywood, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. Tonight, become a better boss. Dr. Eric Anisich from the USC Marshall School of Business is here to tell us how to effectively manage employees. Is a balloon animal sculpture really an appropriate Christmas bonus? We'll find out. And we'll talk t-shirt economics. Can you get rich selling the shirts off your back? A case study in Paula Poundstone's unique strategy in how to lose money gives us the answer. I'm Adam Felber, this show's conversational HR department, trying to comply with government regulations mandating that podcasts stay on topic. And now, please welcome the woman who never passes the required webinar training on relevance, Paula Poundstone!
Thank you so much. Wonderful job, house band. Thank you.
That's Kristen Webb, our contrabassoonist. Welcome back, Kristen.
Low notes.
Those were some very low notes.
That sounds great. I have some news.
Oh, you do?
I do have news, which is Tom Hanks has agreed to come on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Who's that?
Tom Hanks, the actor.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Tom Hanks.
Wow, really?
You know, he's the nicest guy.
Everybody says he's the nicest guy in Hollywood, but he's sure not on a lot of podcasts.
No, I mean, he's a movie coming out.
Yeah.
He's just receiving the Cecil B. DeMille Award at the, I think it's at the SAG-AFTRA Awards this year, Lifetime Achievement.
Oh, not the Cecil B. DeMille Best Chariot Award.
No, but no, Best Actor and Lifetime Achievement. He's got two Academy Awards for Best Actor, but he's
known. One was for Bosom Buddies.
He's known, no, he did not get an Academy Award for Bosom Buddies.
The movie.
He is known for being the nicest guy in the world.
Absolutely.
And so I was a little surprised.
I am.
By his demands.
Demands?
In order to come on the show.
He sent you a rider?
He sent an email with some things that he would need.
Well, he's a big star. We should give him whatever he needs.
That's exactly what I thought.
Okay.
He wants pedophores.
Okay.
And
doable.
He doesn't want Mrs. Culpepper to wear her ruby sateen dress.
What?
What?
You mean your hand puppet, Mrs. Culpepper?
I will not be seen without my ruby sateen dress.
Mrs. Culpepper, you arguably...
And I'm not going to have Tom Hanks telling me what I can wear. I'm not going to consult Tom Hanks on my wardrobe. Captain Culpepper always said that I looked delicious in my ruby sateen dress.
Mrs. Culpepper, I bet he still loves your ruby sateen dress.
No, I think he would. Well, he alive, but...
Oh,
Captain Culpepper has passed away.
Oh, well, you know, any good soldier going down in battle, that's often the way they want to go down.
That's not how he died, Adam Felber. Captain Culpepper succumbed to triotoxism.
Triotoxism?
Which is poisoning by a cheese or other dairy products.
Oh, my Lord.
It was very sad.
Yeah, one bad ham and Swiss and it's done.
No, it was not a Swiss cheese.
No, it wasn't?
It was the Gouda that got him. and I'm not going to allow Tom Hanks to tell me what to wear. I'm surprised if you provide pinafores for him. No. That's your mistake, Adam Felber.
Is Paula Poundstone in there? Paula, can I talk to you for a minute Ms. Culpepper?
Yeah, yeah.
Are we really going to turn Tom Hanks down based on the whim of some demonstrably already unclothed hand puppet?
I think, once pinafores, I like... We always have a couple of bags of Hawaiian chips. We have some double stuffed Oreos. We have a bag full of Heath bars. We have the pumpkin shaped Reese's peanut butter cup for
I feel like his demands are
pettifours.
I don't think that's an unreasonable demand. I'll bring the pettifours.
Okay. All right. I'll let him know.
And if we can just get Ms. Culpepper to play ball, then we're done.
What?
All right. Paula, speaking about clothing.
Yes.
And hotel soap. Let's talk about how your t-shirt sales are going, because we frequently talk about t-shirts on this show.
Remarkably soft tri poly blend t-shirt.
I'm gonna let that go this week.
It has a self portrait on the left breast and a memorable quote on the back.
Yes,
and they're very popular.
They are.
They're very popular.
Okay.
Certainly in our house, very popular.
Well, they're popular with your daughter for a reason.
Well, I just hired my daughter, my oldest daughter, to fold shirts. We had a new shipment of shirts come in, and they come rolled. And in order for me to put them into the suitcase to carry them to my job.
Oh, my back hurts hearing about this. Yes?
Yeah. Then I need them folded. So...
I paid my daughter to fold.
It took 5 hours and 15 minutes of folding.
Okay, and how much did you pay her?
It was $108,
paid her $108
and 20 and 75 cents, I think it was. But what I did was I paid $109.
You paid $109.
I think it was that. Excuse me. I take that back. It was, yeah, that's what it was.
Now, how much do you charge per shirt at your shows?
I believe it's 30 for the standard and 32 for the baseball style. However, both are made from a remarkably soft tri-poly blend.
Yes, of course.
They're equally valuable.
And how much did it cost you per shirt?
I'm not even certain.
Okay, this would be a good thing to know when you're setting the price of a product.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
Because if the answer is $40, I'm going to identify a problem right there.
Yeah. Well, of course, I have to carry them on the road.
You carry literally hundreds of shirts with you on the road.
Usually I have 30. On the first night out, I have 32 of the standard and 40 of the
baseball. So 72
baseball
t-shirts you're carrying luggage.
And, ladies and gentlemen, you can't see Adam Felber, but I'm going to just tell you, he's doing this right in his head. It's no scratch paper, no calculator.
I think we're going to see that the math is kind of easy here.
It's so impressive. Here's what happens. Every venue we go to, I have to pay a seller, and then I have to give a percentage to the venue. And the sellers, I got to tell you, I have this sheet. We call it a merchandise worksheet, where I tell them how many I counted in.
Okay.
There's a box that says count out. So what they're supposed to do is at the end of the night, they're supposed to count how many were left over. And then there's how many sold, which you get by subtracting how many you started with.
I am familiar with addition and subtraction.
Then we put in the box the price of the item.
Right.
And then the last thing is, you know, total.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how many times just the number 3 has been in the last box.
Total 3?
Yes.
Isn't the total?
Which is not
to be
even
money?
A monetary. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So typically at the end of the night, how many have you sold? I'm just trying to figure out if this is worth it.
I might sell maybe somewhere from 7 to 10 per job.
Okay.
So in 3 nights, I might sell, well,
at best 30.
At best.
Well, 30 is a lot. I guess it's 30 times 30. It's $900.
And then I exaggerate it, come to think of it. I think it might be 20. I just, you know, I do have a publicist, and I'm trying to get on the cover of Forbes magazine, and that's why I said that it would be 30 for 3 nights.
But it's not.
It's more like 20.
Were it 30, you still wouldn't be on the cover of Forbes. or in the back pages.
What do you mean? I don't understand what you're saying.
It sounds like it's adding up to being not worth it for you.
Well, I haven't given up. Let me just say that. I haven't given up. In fact, I promote it often here on the podcast.
Yeah, you can go to www.paulapoundstone.com and get this lovely tri-poly blend shirt, which I'm not going to criticize you calling it tri-poly anymore.
I can't tell you how many people, when they do buy the shirt at my shows, come up to me and say, they're holding the shirt in their hands and sort of stroking it with their fingers, and they go, tell Adam he's wrong.
But I've never claimed it's not soft. It's a very soft shirt. I have felt it myself.
Do you know why it's soft, Adam?
Because it's a tri-blend.
Because it's made from a remarkably soft tri-poly blend.
You can't even say it.
A tri-poly
blend.
Plus
it doesn't.
That's a different.
It's a Bollywood
blend.
That's
a different. Yeah, that's a different kind of shirt altogether. There, in the tri-poly blend, right. There's holes where the nipples are.
All right, you brought it up. I understand you have a new theory about your wounded nipples.
I do.
Now, for
actually.
Those of you who don't know, Paula, having lived a blameless life with multiple cats, all of a sudden, within about a month of each other this summer, one cat pierced her left nipple and then another cat pierced her right with their hind claws. And that's never happened to you.
It never happened to me in all the years I've owned
cats. And we've tracked that on this show to the detriment of all of us.
I have given a number of nipple updates, and tonight
And now they're fine.
I have a friend. They're totally healed.
Those are healed nipples.
But what I realized, I was doing push-ups today at my Taekwondo class. And yes, I'm one belt away from being a black belt. But nice. I was doing push-ups today and on using this device that you put on the floor and you hold with your hands. And after each push-up, you take the things that you're holding with your hands slide, but they have a resistance from springs. Uh-huh. So you're sliding them.
So you're getting other muscle groups besides just your pectoral muscles.
Precisely.
And your deltoids.
And I noticed while I was about to cry using it that the name of it is something like, you know, chest hardener or something. And that's when it dawned to me that what's happening is my chest has become harder with muscle.
Okay.
And maybe extends a little further than it used to, and yet my nipples have not gotten harder at all. And so I think what happened was when my cats jumped on me, they miscalculated where my nipples were.
That would imply that they had been being respectful to your nipples beforehand, wouldn't it?
For years.
So your theory is that somehow all the workout, and you do look great.
Thank you very much.
You
I
look
feel
ripped.
Good.
You look like Carrot Top.
I look like Carrot Top? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Have you seen what has happened to him in the last decade or two?
What happened to him?
Oh, I'll show you a picture later.
Is he all work?
He's done some exercise.
Oh, has he?
He piscopoed really hard.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did.
Oh my gosh! So, do you think I'm going to start using props?
Yeah.
Oh, I hope not.
I think you're going to be a prop comic. I think it starts with Paula's nippleless t-shirts, and then it moves on from there.
My remarkably soft tri-poly blend t-shirt. So,
let's change the subject. Now you saw Rachel Maddow.
I saw Rachel Maddow. It was so great. She
tweeted at you while you were in line to see her.
Somebody told me that she had. But
I saw you tweeting that you were walking to the back of the line, and Rachel tweeted back. She quote tweeted you because she wanted everybody to read it. Almost there, Paula.
Somebody told me that, and I never saw it. I went home and looked for it, and I never saw it.
Okay.
You got to show me the way, because that is so exciting
to me. I'll show that to you right after you see Carrot Top.
Rachel Maddow's using props now. So the line was unbelievably long, like 2,000 people, which is part of, it really buttresses my theory that absolutely the Russians cheated to help Trump get elected, because you should have seen this crowd. They were so happy to see Rachel.
I hear that no newscaster has ever had a crowd even slightly.
It was the biggest crowd ever.
Ever.
It was an incredibly long line, but very, very nice people. And it was such a long line. And I'm in fairly good shape right now. It was such a long line that I was actually tired from walking to the back of it.
If only you'd been walking with your chest.
Yeah. So anyways, but she was great. And this is an important thing for our show.
Okay.
She used the word outré twice.
Did she really?
Yeah.
Does that mean she listens to us?
I don't know, but I knew what it meant. It was so exciting.
Yeah, because we had
all the people around me were like, what? What?
And you were like, outré.
Yeah, outré, of course.
That means something from my show.
Honestly, I've totally forgotten
what it means.
What it means.
Well, that's okay.
Which reminds me that I've come up with a theory.
Yes.
I have a theory that part of the reason the words, I mean, I can remember the vocabulary word during the show, but after the show, honestly, I don't remember it.
Right.
Anymore.
I remember we did a test and you cheated.
I didn't cheat. I studied, asshole.
Well, but you claimed you didn't.
Okay, I did claim
I
didn't.
And then you made reference to the flashcards in your car.
Oh, damn it. Yeah, no, I did. I didn't cheat.
So you didn't cheat, you lied.
I did study.
Yeah.
I didn't cheat, I lied. Yeah. Which means I could at least be a Trump nephew.
That's right.
Hey, Paula. You know, every once in a while we get a new advertiser that I get super excited about. And I have to say, just because of the circumstances of my life, right now I'm really excited about our new advertiser, Quince. Of Quince.com, the clothing provider.
Not to be mistaken for Quince from Midsummer Night's Dream. And let me just say this, and maybe it's not important to an advertisement, but when I was in the fourth grade, our class put on a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay.
And I played Peter Quince. There's the connection.
One of the mechanicals. That's a great connection. Also, yes, has nothing to do with this, which is that Quince is an online clothing store. And as you know, Paula, I've lost a little weight lately.
Oh, right.
75 pounds. Yeah. So I literally have no clothes that are in my size until I just ordered some stuff at Quince. And I figured, like, here's a chance for me to create a new look for myself. A whole new image.
And how's it going?
Not bad. I mean, the clothes are fantastic. I know that you ordered some too. What I got is yes. The Comfort Stretch Traveler 5-pocket pants. And I got the 100% European linen shirt, and it looks breezy and it fits beautifully. And these are like premium pieces of clothing that are selling for like, you know, $30 a piece or starting at $30 at quince.com. It's awesome. I look good.
I ordered the brushed lounge jogger.
Ooh.
And, you know, I put them on when I came back from New York. I pulled them on and I swear to you, okay, this is not scientific because I was tired already.
Right.
But they were so soft and so comfortable that honestly, like right as I got them up to my waist, I think my eyes closed. They're so, it's a softness. It's a kind of softness that I don't think I've ever experienced in a garment, honestly.
You know, my drawstring European linen trousers are a little bit like that, too. Like, so comfortable that I just want to hang out with myself.
Sure. Yeah. And they're European. Keep that in mind.
European. They are so European. And you can get those kinds. You can get washable silk tops. You can get 14-karat gold jewelry and, like, all these accessories.
Quince sells a lineup of timeless pieces that keep their customers looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm not certain that I look chic, but certainly if I did, it's not going to take a lot of effort.
I now look chic and I feel pretty great. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabric. It's all good as far as I can see.
Is it my imagination or do they cut out the middleman?
They cut out the middleman, Paula Poundstone.
I love it when they cut out the middleman. That's the thing. They cut out the middleman. That's fantastic.
So be like me and Paula. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/nobody for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/nobody to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/nobody. And honestly, I look fantastic. Paula, you won't be able to keep your hands off me.
Oh, I can't wait. And don't think that if you had to return something, don't think you're sending it to a middleman because they cut out the middleman.
They cut out the middleman. That's quince.com/nobody. And if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code. Adam, you know, I have a house full of cats and a couple of big dogs. So I have this one cat who every night likes to stand in the hallway and yowl. And he has kind of a little bit like me, because of allergies. I don't know why he has it, but his name is Theo and he has a really gravelly voice. So he'll, it's hard to describe it. I can't do a good impression, but it's a little dusty, gravelly voice. Okay, so earlier I was laying on the living room floor because I'm exhausted and I'm wearing a nylon fiberfill vest. As I'm laying on the floor, Theo shoves his head through one sleeve of the vest and crawls up and is now stuck inside in between my back and the vest and is yowling because he can't get out. And then finally his head comes out the other sleeve and he goes out. What's not to love? That's what I say. What is not to love?
Which brings me to this. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program.
Your pet is part of your family, you know that already, and you want the best for them no matter what. But vet bills can really add up. Go ahead, ask me. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most.
The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. That's a lot of pets.
True.
They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are.
Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account.
To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/Paula. That's ASPCA. We spell that ASPCA. Petinsurance.com/Paula. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. And if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code.
Hey, Paula, it's been almost a year now since I got my Helix mattress. And as you remember, there was some drama surrounding Helix mattresses.
Because
First sponsored us, Bonnie took the mattress and she's been loving it. But finally, I got my chance to get a Helix mattress and I sleep so well. I mean, the family bed is where we all gather. We watch movies in our room occasionally and everybody just piles on it and it's comfy. And yet when one person hops on, the other half of the mattress doesn't fly up. I'm a fan.
Well, you know, Adam, everybody is unique and everyone sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. Models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side. Models with a more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions. Plus, enhanced cooling features to keep you from overheating at night. And if your spine needs some extra TLC, they got you. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design combining individually wrapped steel coils in the base with premium foam layers on top. It is the perfect combination of comfort and support.
I agree with that last bit. I don't get all the technical stuff about the mattress, but it is soft and supportive. Helix offers 20 unique mattresses, the award-winning Lux, which I got, and ultra-premium Elite Collections, the Helix Plus, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and the Helix Kids mattress, designed for growing bodies and endorsed by child sleep experts, and my daughter now wants one. So, how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? You go to their website, take the Helix sleep quiz, and you find your perfect mattress match in under 2 minutes.
You know, when you said you can't follow all the technical stuff, it's really not that technical. You know, no matter what way you sleep, they have a mattress that will support and comfort you. How hard is that?
You know, when you say it that way, it seems a lot simpler. I take it back. That's my boner.
And your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door, free of charge. And Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress.
Well, I like that there's a warranty, but they can pry that mattress from my cold, dead hands. I took the sleep quiz. I was matched with the Helix Midnight Lux. I got the Lux. And I love it. It is such an upgrade from my old mattress.
You know, I think Bonnie got the Midnight Lux.
She did.
Too.
Yeah.
You're not here. Don't want to take Adam's word for it? Well, you got Bonnie's word. Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Your sleepy time pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners.
That's a lot, and it's already not that expensive a mattress. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula.
That's helixsleep.com/Paula.
This is their best offer yet. It's fantastic. It won't last long.
With Helix, better sleep starts now. Well, not right now.
And if you're going to get it anyway,
use our code. So anyways, I think that the reason I'm not remember, I think we need a little song.
A song with all our words?
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, if you're one of our listeners out there and you want to write a song with all the vocabulary words, you will instantly
win a bar of
hotel soap.
No. I think what we have to do is build each week. Like, here's an example.
Okay, I take that back, listeners.
Like, what if it was like, this week's word is truckle. It means to be subservient or obsequious. Last week's word was stickle. It means to argue or insist stubbornly, especially about trifles.
Yeah, I like my idea.
Yeah, your idea's better?
Yeah.
All right, I'd be happy for people to submit vocabulary songs.
Yeah, submit a song that uses
songs.
As many vocabulary of our vocabulary words as possible.
I don't know if you're going to find anything better than this week's word is truckle.
Hey, do you have a word for this week?
It means to be subservient or obsequious.
Is that
last week's word was stickle.
Oh, dear
it means
God.
To argue or insist stubbornly, especially about trifles.
Yeah, that doesn't rhyme.
You don't have to rhyme, Adam.
Okay,
you don't always have to rhyme.
They don't always have to.
What's with you and rhyming?
I like rhyming.
This week's word is truckle, Adam.
Okay.
It means to be subservient or obsequious. Here, I'll use it in a sentence. I can't wait to find out what Vladimir Putin has on Lindsey Graham that has caused him to truckle so.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it is good. I'm not going to truckle to Tom Hanks.
Nobody's asking you to truckle, Mrs. Culpepper.
I'm not taking off my red sateen dress for Tom Hanks.
He doesn't have designs on
Academy,
you.
Academy, Schmacademy, I don't care.
Did you
Adam
just
Felma.
Schma?
A Schmacademy.
You Schmacademy'd. You're Southern gentry. What's with the Schma?
I've met Jews.
Touché.
I will not truckle to Tom Hanks.
Okay, one more thing before we move on. We're all over the map, but we do have an update on our Frontier Communications.
We do?
Yes. Now, you just finished we talked about it last week. You finished your week of not using a smartphone.
A smartphone, and I journaled about it, and last
like
week I gave a variety of updates throughout the show. I gave my journal entries.
Right.
And
you did your part because they went ahead and sent us a swag bag and $1,000.
Right. Well, they sent me. That's not true.
This
they
is the update.
They sent me a large sort of suitable for photographing.
A prop check.
A prop check.
Something that Carrot Top might use.
Yeah. I let me just show you the position that the security guard held my arm in when they took me
in
out of the bank.
Yeah.
Trying to cash
Don't try
the cardboard
to cash
check.
Those prop checks.
Yeah.
But they were going to transfer the real money into your real bank account.
I wonder if Carrot Top gets paid in prop checks.
That'd be funny. That'd be deeply amusing and appropriate. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
The money hasn't arrived yet, has it?
Not according to my bookkeeper. No,
so,
they haven't seen hide nor hair of the Frontier Communications check. And it's the only reason that Dame Maggie Smith is out on, did you see her on your way in?
I saw
tonight?
Somebody on Miranda Street out there. I did not think it was Dame Maggie Smith.
Well, it is. She has agreed to do the show, and we have certainly not truckled to her. She said that she would come on. She wouldn't accept money, but she said that we could give $1,000 to her favorite charity, and she's been waiting in her car
until that money
comes since, because I don't have the $1,000. I said, great, this will work, because I'm getting $1,000 from Frontier Communications, and then so far,
it looks like
nothing.
They're sniffing us. I got to be honest. I mean, you went ahead and journaled, and you listened to those
CDs. I should have waited until the money was in the bank.
You should have waited until the money, because it's not in the bank. Now, Tony Anita Hall emailed Frontier Communications online marketing manager Karen Quach. Quach? Quack. What was it, Tony? Quack. Quack.
I wish you could see. So every now and then, I mean, I love it that we do an audio, you know, there's a podcast, but every now and then there's something that's such a visual that I wish you could have seen Tony Anita Hull's face while she was doing, she was like, quack, quack.
As though she could get us the pronunciation visually.
And I
yeah.
And I looked over because it was clearly a bird expert. Quack.
But anyway, Karen Quach is going to see where the.
I thought it was Quach.
It's spelled Quach. It's pronounced Quack.
Yeah.
And I'm here to say that's not that much better either.
No, it's Quach, but she's on the lam. She's hiding out.
Well, she is, in fact, she's out of the office until a few days from now. So.
She's been kiting cardboard checks all over the country.
Getting people to perform tasks.
Yeah. We're supposed to have been paid the grant, and Karen Kwatch is on. She's out of the office until October what? Late in October.
Later in October than it is now.
Yeah. Is that what her email says?
No.
I'm out till later in October than it is now.
Yes.
If I owe you any money, surely I'll get back to you when I'm back
later in this October.
October
or another October to be named later.
Yeah. I'm sure I'm busy working.
All right. Coming up, Steve Jobs says, it doesn't make sense to hire smart people and tell them what to do. We hire smart people so they can tell us what to do. What's the best way to manage your employees? Dr. Eric Anisich is here to tell how to be a good boss when we return on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is sponsored in part by Tuesday.
Tuesday, the name to trust in days of the week.
Yes, Tuesday, because beginning October 29th, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone will drop on Tuesday instead of the more familiar Monday.
Wah! Tuesdays are so much better than Mondays. Monday is the beginning of another week, a day you have to gin up the energy to go out and tilt at windmills again. But Tuesday, nobody expects much out of Tuesday. It's not the middle of the week.
It isn't.
It's not the beginning of the week. Mm-mm. It's not the end of the week. It's the kind of day nobody really cares about. So it's a perfect day for all the nobodies in the world to tune in to our show.
So remember, nobodies, when you wake up on Monday, October 28th, expecting to hear our podcast, don't. Because as of October 29th, you'll hear fresh episodes of Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone every Tuesday.
Don't get confused. It's Tuesday instead of Monday. Tuesday. There's nothing special about it. It's just there, like you are, every Tuesday, checking out a new episode of Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Oh, house band Kristen Webb. That is fantastic. It is so good to have you back. Paula.
Yeah.
You are a boss.
Yeah.
And I don't mean
that. I'm not the boss.
No, you're not the boss.
I'm a boss.
Yes. You employ some people.
Yeah.
Yeah. How good a boss are you?
I suck at it.
Oh, yeah?
I employ a small group of people, and honestly, I'm not very good at it. I hate to ask anybody to do anything. I can't stand talking about money. If I had more hands and more skills and could be in two places at once, I'd just do everything myself.
Oh, being a boss is a skill. We have someone here who's going to help you develop your skill set. Dr. Eric Anisich is an assistant professor of management and organization at USC's Marshall School of Business. Dr. Anisich is an expert in social hierarchy within groups.
Ooh.
Ooh. Please welcome Dr. Eric Anisich. Wow.
So glad you could be here. Thanks for coming.
Me. It's exciting.
Let's start with a foundational question. What are the most important practices of a good boss? What should Paula know right now?
That is an incredibly important question. It's also an incredibly big question when you think about all the types of variables that could come into play to influence effective leadership.
Okay.
But I mean, one way to approach that question, I think, is to take the definition of leadership and then kind of unpack it into its components and try to see where you can go from there. So a pretty common definition of leadership is something along the lines of the ability to motivate and enable a group of individuals to accomplish some shared goal or common task, something like this. So if you break that up into its component parts, really it's about motivating people and enabling them to do what you want them to do. And so the question is, how do you do that, right? So at the very kind of base of the pyramid, you have kind of extrinsic motivation, which are, you know, kind of these external rewards or incentives that people are given, you know, pay, even just praise.
Benefits,
promotion opportunities, things like this are certainly motivating to some extent. But
In the Paula Poundstone organization does have the potential to eventually become Paula Poundstone.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that
what
you're promising?
Yeah. They could all.
She's the fourth Paula Poundstone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they could all be at the top of the T-shirt empire that I've created. They could lose thousands and thousands of dollars making a podcast.
Yeah.
That's possible for anybody.
Anybody could aspire to that.
Yeah. Huh?
That sounds appealing, but.
Yeah.
What I would say is, you know, moving away from extrinsic motivation into the realm of intrinsic motivation, which is essentially doing something just for its own sake because you really enjoy doing it. You derive some pleasure, satisfaction from it. That's really the gold standard when you want to think about motivating employees. And so there are several, you know, things you can do in that regard. I mean, one of the most effective is something known as job crafting. So if you can give your employees a sense of autonomy to decide how and when to do their work, maybe who to do their work with, maybe they don't always have to come into, I mean, I was gonna say the office or the, what, you know, the studio, the podcast.
Wow.
You know, cubicle.
Paul,
here,
I'm going to work from home next week. If that's all right. I got to just find a little bit more about what my goals are for this podcast. Right.
I had a nanny when my kids were little and I traveled and I let her, design her own job. And so she just never came in, and my kids live like the boxcar children.
So within reason, right? You have to also provide some structure and guidance and, you know, shared goals, and, you know, the culture you create is all kind of part of that. But once you have some of those things in place, then if you give people a little autonomy, a little flexibility, it tends to be associated with higher levels of satisfaction, even creativity, because, you know, a boss isn't always the one who knows the best or efficient way to do something.
So that's Steve Jobs.
Yeah, exactly. Empowering the people who know what they're doing to figure out the best ways to do it tends to lead to better outcomes. So
let's get some specifics of Paula's.
So you hire people and you let them do what you hired them for.
Yeah, to some extent. And, you know, it's going to vary by context. You know, what latitude means in different contexts is going to vary. But to the extent you can give them a little flexibility, a little autonomy, that's one of kind of the core predictors of intrinsic motivation.
So, Paula, let's talk about your actual business and, like, problems that you have, like communication.
Yeah, I'm not a good communicator because I don't like to talk about work for the most part. What I do is I leave notes. I leave a lot of notes, and most of my sign it anonymous.
Well, I'm sure signing it anonymous is not a good idea.
So, maybe that's not.
What's the best way to communicate with employees?
Yeah, that's a good question. So anonymous notes is maybe could work in some situations, but, I think.
Probably not.
Probably not. But what I would say is there's probably not a generalizable answer to that question. But, you know, if the message is very routine or simple, I think it's fine to, you know, leave a text message or leave a note or whatever. That's not really an issue. I think the issue becomes when the message is more ambiguous or complex. And then if you're not doing it face-to-face or over some sort of video conference call or something, you're going to miss out on nonverbal cues, the tone of voice, which can communicate a lot. Follow-up questions.
Eye rolling.
Eye rolls, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and this is, you know, you're like all comedians. I mean,
if
you
they're
have
flipping
lots of
you off.
Sarcasm, yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't know that.
For example,
you wouldn't know if your mates get flipped off.
It's important to have Wendell right in front of
me. And the other thing, I mean, about communication and being a boss, and in particular, the effects of power, power tends to have an amplifying effect on people's communication. So, especially if you're communicating down the hierarchy.
Because I can think of someone in a position of power. That doesn't communicate well at all.
Yeah, it's quite common, unfortunately, for leaders not to be very effective communicators. But I think one way to help...
He communicates with one man, and his name is Vladimir.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Vladimir.
And not effectively either.
It's me again. Yeah, not effectively, yeah. Right. Okay, so what did you say about power? Position of power?
Yeah, if you say something, so let's take gratitude, for example. So I do some research on the relationship between power and the expressions of gratitude. One thing that happens is if leaders express gratitude, it's going to be even more beneficial for employees because it's like amplified as it's coming down the hierarchy.
So it's not like gratitude from somebody in the next
cubicle.
Right,
it's not like a stranger or your peer or your subordinate. It has this extra special
punch. So just
kind
saying
of
thanks
punch.
Once in a while.
Yeah, saying thanks.
Thanks for keeping me on topic.
Yeah, sure. Or,
you know, something like that.
Even silence, you know, the absence of communication can, you know, be deafening at times, right? So I think a useful example of this is, you know, an airline pilot, right? Big position of power in that moment when they're flying you around. They have your life in your hands. If you go through, you know, moderate or severe turbulence, you know, most people's heart, you know, starts to race a little bit. If the captain remains completely silent, never addresses it, you're going to, you know, wonder what's going on. Was that dangerous? Is that a problem?
On the other hand, if it comes on and you just hear,
Right.
That would be effective really communication, but it wouldn't be helpful.
That would communicate a very important message, but it wouldn't put me at ease.
If there's anybody who knows what this button is for, could you please come to the cockpit?
Right.
That
exactly
really is a turnoff.
So, but I do hear you. I've been through the harrowing moments I can remember being through on planes is because the pilot wasn't talking to us.
Yeah.
Once we were landing at LAX once, coming in for a landing, we got really close to the, it was kind of a rainy day.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of turbulence. We got really close
to
the landing strip.
From LA can't fly in the rain.
Yeah, I guess not. We got super close to the landing strip, right? And then we pulled up again and went straight smack out over the ocean. And there was deafening silence from the cockpit. And, like, the woman next to me was gripping my hand and sobbing. Like, people thought that...
Okay, but I think there's more to this story. What had you done to her?
Oh, terrible things.
Yeah, okay,
I spent the entire flight breaking down her sense of self-worth.
Yeah.
No, but she was alone. Like, everybody was panicking because everybody was like, we're not landing. They must be taking us out over the ocean mm-hmm. to let us explode or something.
Uh-huh.
So finally, when we land, the pilot lets us know, I just couldn't see the landing strip that well, so I figured I'd just use some discretion and fly us out of the ocean, turn around.
Well, so while he's not seeing the landing strip, he was supposed to talk to you guys?
No, but sometime between that and landing, yes.
If anyone can see the landing strip, can they please come to the cockpit?
Right.
All right,
but- I was just going to say, so the airline example is one thing, but I think, you know, a more tangible kind of takeaway that I think you could consider and other leaders can consider doing is maybe taking a page out of the playbook of professors. So something I have to do sometimes reluctantly is this idea of holding office hours, right? So just a block of time you set aside in your schedule, maybe it's mm-hmm. each week, 2 hours, maybe it's a couple times a month, whatever. Every time you block out that time and just tell your employees, hey, look, I'm going to be available this time. You can call me, text me, come to my office, come see me. If you have any questions, concerns, comments, feedback, whatever, like you just want to get to know each other better, you know, just signaling that to your employees, I think really helps just culturally because it shows people you really care about them. You're actually interested in their voice.
Excellent.
But it also kind of breaks down some of these barriers, you know, if they have to ask you clarifications, like, were you the anonymous post-it? No, you know, is that, whatever. They can ask those types of questions.
Let me pause you for just a minute.
I think you're thinking of a bigger company than my company.
Right, so I'm joking.
My office is my bedroom. Okay, so Wendell, my assistant.
He's really the employee that we're focusing on here.
Well, he's one of a very small cadre of employees.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, I recently hired my daughter to fold T-shirts. But he sits at a big computer, and then a few feet from him, I stand on my treadmill desk, on the treadmill part, and I have a computer in front of me. I never turn the treadmill on because while you walk on it, it jiggles and it knocks the computer off. But I do stand on
it. This is the most sad-ass business I have.
We're going public. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that now.
No, you can. I think in this case, you're probably within your rights.
Yeah, which investors are salivating.
Okay, so given her small business setup, mm-hmm. is there something that she should be doing with Wendell?
Well, I was just saying, for me to say, like, I'm going to be in my office and you can come, voice concerns or give me ideas. He's right there. He's 3 feet away from me.
Yeah, so I think the office hours recommendation probably makes more sense for a larger organization. I mean, yeah. So
do you think, though...
I'm really enjoying your facial expression
during
that.
Do you think it's too,
yeah, wish,
do you think it's too late
that.
To require uniforms?
Well, so again, just you and Wendell, right? So we're just talking about... maybe one uniform, unless depending on if you wear it also. It might be a little late in the game for that. It also, it depends what your goals are. So, I mean, uniforms can be useful if you want people to, let's say...
Why do you have people wear uniforms?
It's a good question. You know, so, I mean, some of the obvious reasons, right? If you need to quickly identify an employee from a customer or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
So Walmart or something, you want to know who's...
I can tell the difference between an employee and a customer. An employee is folding the T-shirt and a customer is taking $5 from me for it.
Right.
So maybe neither Walmart doesn't need uniforms. But another reason I think is if you want your team to identify more at the collective level rather than really focus on their individuality, you can kind of induce that conformity and that higher level kind of identification through uniforms.
It might work here at the podcast, but at home with Wendell.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Think at the podcast we should wear uniforms?
I'm not saying we should. I'm saying at least we'd have an actual team present as opposed to
you and Wendell
standing behind Wendell and teacher. I think making him wear like a jump. Like a jump suit or something sounds like a little abusive at this point.
I want him to wear coveralls.
Yeah, coveralls. And have his
embroidered name.
Yeah.
As though he were a mechanic.
Hi, I'm Wendell. Yeah. I wanted to say hi. Yeah.
I wouldn't do that.
No, you don't think that's a good... No. What about hairnets? Do you think it's okay to require hairnets? Because sometimes he picks up food for me.
Sometimes. Well, okay.
Poor Wendell. I'm just picturing him in a hairnet and a
coverall.
Well, I just want, you know, I want. There's a lot of regulations in business
how about
now.
How about retreats and team building? Should she take Wendell on a retreat and do trust falls and stuff?
Okay, well, trust falls with Wendell. That's interesting. I mean, I don't know how big Wendell is, so I don't know if trust falls would work.
He once pushed me in a wheelchair. Does that count?
Okay, well, so what I'll say about team building, you know, and again, I don't know about your specific situation, but in general, team building exercises can be really effective.
Are they effective?
So they have to be structured correctly. So there's one study that I'm aware of. It's a meta-analysis, so it's a study of studies. They're basically trying to quantify the average effect size of the relationship between two variables, in this case, the decision to engage in team building and team performance.
Wait, you got to back up for me.
So I'm sorry.
I didn't understand a thing. Well, Do you have office hours? Can I come in?
A meta-analysis is there's been a bunch of studies more or less on the same topic, and they take all those studies together and try to quantify what it all adds up to. It's kind of more effective than a single study, which can be unreliable.
Okay. That's a fantastic explanation. Yes.
Yeah. He's good at that.
Yeah. So
Adam Felber's a wood wizard.
Thank you, Mrs. Culpepper.
So there is a meta-analysis.
I'm not taking off my ruby satin dress.
You will, Mrs. Culpepper.
For anyone, including Tom Hanks. Why do you truckle so to Tom Hanks?
He's a big star, Mrs. Culpepper.
Oh, it's okay. That seems like it was necessary.
She's one of my
employees. It needed to come out. It seemed like.
I'm not wearing a uniform.
Yes, you are, Mrs. Culpepper.
So what I'll say about it is, according to
that study... What do you think, when Tom Hanks comes, what if we gave him a uniform? Wouldn't that be the best?
It really
would
be.
Here's your pataphores, but I'd like you to put these coveralls on.
We are going to let the good doctor get to his point about this meta-study.
Of course,
we
didn't even
get
to the... Of course.
Okay, so there's a study.
Yeah, so it tends to be effective in a couple of narrow but useful areas. So it tends to have positive effects on affective outcomes, like trust building between people, as well as kind of process-related outcomes.
Why does it matter if your employees trust one another?
Well, it's important when you get into complex interdependent tasks where you need to...
Give me an example.
Okay, so, well, I don't want to speculate on what examples may be in your life.
Use another company.
Right, but, you know, let's say you have, you know, some deadline, there's some report, you know, multiple skill sets are represented, you can't do it all yourself, so you all have to, you know, all hands on deck, everyone has to contribute in some way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so there's something called affective trust, right? You want to, you know, trust the other person, you know, it... Like that they have your best interest in heart, that they're not going to betray you. But then there's also kind of maybe performance-based trust is what you would call it. So a belief in their ability to get their part of the interdependent task done on time, things like that. So if you don't have that, you're always going to be looking over your shoulder or looking over your employees' shoulders and, you know, wondering, are they doing it right? It might lead you to micromanage people. Mm-hmm. But if you can have trust at any level, not just as a boss, but any level, it's going to help kind of streamline the coordination and communication of employees.
Do you feel like you and Wendell have a lot of trust between you?
Yes.
You trust him to do complex tasks?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
The detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, "Is it Renee?" And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof wherever you get your podcasts and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events, such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric.
Urgh.
They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paul, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And
if there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality Podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, what do all these funny people have in common? Cecily Strong, Jason Mantzoukas, Duncan Trussell, Paul Scheer, Scott Aukerman, Beth Stelling, Tom Papa, Lauren Lapkus, Louis Anderson, Lisa Gilroy, Paul F. Tompkins, and Sir Patrick Stewart. They've all played characters on the hit comedy podcast Mega, an improvised satire from the staff of a fictional megachurch. The next time you're in the mood for some laughs, great guests, out-of-this-world improv and cultural commentary, we're here for you, baby. Listen to Mega anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Now, what when you're talking about team building to develop this trust, what kinds of things are these team building things?
So it really, there are lots of ones that
improv
could work.
Exercises.
Possibly, yeah. So I'll tell you the two criteria that really matter. So if you want to do an effective team building exercise, it really needs to be.
I have to go into the bedroom and say, Wendell, I'm in a barn right now. Where are you?
So you like this improv idea already.
Yeah, yeah. I'm in a barn right now, Wendell. Yes, and me.
Okay. Yes, and I'm out here milking the cows.
I can see it. All right. Sorry. So what are the trust building?
So
exercises?
A couple of criteria that you want to kind of check off if you're going to have a team building activity. It needs to be stressful and meaningful. So you need to kind of
stressful
pair those things
and
together.
Meaningful.
Uh-huh. Right. So if you only have one but not the other, it
so
may backfire.
So if he was like strapped to a board and there was a radial arm saw coming between his legs, that's stressful.
So that would be stressful, but I would push back on that maybe not being meaningful.
Well, it's meaningful to him.
Right. Right. Right.
One would hope.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. I think that it would build trust to see that I would turn the machine off before it hit his private parts.
Right, right.
Yeah, don't you think that would be good? Where do you work again, USC?
Yeah, just making sure that's not a trick question. I think, that's a good idea to turn it off before it hits his genitals.
How about employee review?
Adam. Okay, wait.
Turn it off. Turn it off.
I'm in the barn milking the cow.
Oh, stop the improv. Turn off the machine.
You're going to be so bonded after that. It's going to be good.
Turn it off, please. Oh, thank you. I'll do anything, boss.
You want to sift those litter boxes for me?
Anything.
I trust you implicitly.
Wow, this really worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so give me an example of something that's stressful and meaningful.
So, an extreme example, which I wouldn't recommend, is, something that people in the military go through. So, Navy SEAL training, right? It's very, very stressful.
Oh, I would
very
like
meaningful.
To see Wendell do Navy SEAL training.
Maybe, I don't think you should.
I think that would
bridge
be great.
Version, 3 or 4 weeks, something like that.
3 or 4 weeks, naval training. Naval
so that's
SEAL
extreme,
training.
Not likely to happen for most people, but
no,
a more
Wendell's
realistic
not
going to
build a bridge for her over a three-week period.
A more realistic one. So I heard PwC, for example, pretty mainstream company.
What's PwC?
PricewaterhouseCoopers, accounting consulting firm.
Aren't they
firm.
The ones that used to do the Academy Awards and then get fired?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, what about the asshole? Like, looking at his Twitter account instead of bringing out the right cards. No. Had they done trust exercises?
I doubt
had they
it.
Done, had, were they Navy SEALs?
Well,
this is a terrible example,
not.
Pricewaterhouse. They fucked up the Academy
they
Awards.
They might have. Well, they definitely did. But
La La Land was not that good a film.
You've taken
true,
it.
Yeah.
If they were naval SEALs, they would know that.
I believe that this might be somewhat outside of Eric's purview.
Eric, Professor Eric, chose Pricewaterhouse. What's the
C4?
Well,
you didn't
Coopers.
Let him get to why he was
Coopers?
Choosing
right,
them.
So, yeah, the example had nothing to do with the Academy Awards, but I see the connection there. But what they did in this...
Is there a lot of trust in between Price and Waterhouse?
Let him tell the story.
I would think so at one point, right?
Yeah. They put their names together. You don't think they ever got together?
Cooper never trusted Price.
I was about to say, you don't think they got together and go, let's fucking throw Coopers under the bus. So there's a problem with the Academy Awards. It was Coopers!
Exactly. And maybe that's why he's on the end, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Exactly.
But
okay,
the exercise was they brought new employees together who had never met. So these are the first things
together.
I'll explain.
And these were accountants?
They probably worked in a variety of roles. I'm not exactly sure. But
well, isn't that what the company does? Aren't they accountants?
Yeah, it's it.
Okay,
yes, but that's
true. Then why would they hire people?
You're impossible to.
Okay, we have with us new employees. We have a dance instructor and a chef. But we're accountants.
Somebody's supposed to be making their ads. Somebody's running their web presence.
No, this is what happens when you let Coopers do the hiring. The guy's a fuck up, and he should be thrown under the bus.
I think it's Waterhouse that wasn't carrying his weight.
And he made Warren Beatty look bad, and that makes me mad.
So anyway.
I mean, this is all interesting and true.
Thank
but
you.
Yeah, so they were bringing employees.
You know, it was a crazy example that you were using.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So they brought together new employees that weren't accountants.
That might have been accountants. I don't know the details of that. I'm just going to fill that in. You can let your imagination take
what
over.
What were their names? I'm kidding.
I don't know. But basically, so some elements that made it slightly stressful, not Navy SEAL stressful, but slightly stressful. They didn't know each other. They had to work together. Under time pressure, it was a task they'd never done before. And so the task was building
Which
a bicycle.
Was accounting.
Right. Exactly.
Building a bicycle.
Building a bicycle from scratch, under time pressure, in front of an audience. And the meaningfulness part came from having to do it for charity. And so it was a competitive aspect. It got people working together on an interdependent task.
Wait,
that they
were building a bike
with.
For charity?
I don't know. There's some monetary element. They were going to donate the bikes, which probably didn't run very well.
But
what was the time pressure? Was it finish the bike or the kid dies?
Ooh, yeah, it was.
That was a lot of pressure.
Did you hear the story about that Make-A-Wish kid that got that really bad bike?
Yeah. they got the kid right there looking hopefully, hooked up to an IV.
couldn't turn the steering wheel for shit. What kind of bike is this? It's a Bryce Waterhouse Cooper's bike.
To make a bike.
So mildly stressful, mildly meaningful. That makes for a reasonably good team building exercise.
Okay.
Something like
mildly
that.
Mildly stressful, mildly meaningful.
You don't want it to be only stressful
but
not meaningful.
That could be the new slogan for this podcast.
Mildly stressful. I do like that, Adam.
Mildly.
Do you see how I complimented Adam?
Yeah.
Mildly stressful.
It felt so much more important than just somebody off the street complimenting me.
Yeah. Mildly
like that
stressful.
That woman that Paula believes is Dame Maggie Smith that liked my outfit.
Why was it mildly stressful, mildly?
Meaningful.
Meaningful.
Yes.
Oh, that's a
All right,
great...
Let's move on to one other thing, which is employee reviews.
Okay.
Is that going to be useful for Paula? Are they useful at all?
Employee reviews are useful.
By the way, how
useful.
Do you know all this? Is it something you studied? Do you have...
So I teach a class on organizational behavior and leadership.
Okay,
my research kind of touches on
question.
Some of
how
this.
How did you know it?
So I sit alone in a cubicle a lot and just read articles.
You
and
are an awfully young-looking guy. Like, the idea that you know anything about any kind of management...
But he's got a PhD.
He has a PhD.
He's an assistant professor of management and organization.
So he says... I have a feeling
that's
he's
true.
The youngest Cooper. That's what I think.
That's why he's an apologist.
Right. Yeah. I mean, another way to look at this is that I'm just some sort of, like, prodigy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
now
the
it
Doogie Howser
different.
Of right. Right. Management.
Right. I
All
prefer
right,
that. Yeah.
The Doogie Howser of management and organizational theory.
All right. So what did you say?
So performance reviews. You were
before we were questioning your credentials to be here at all.
Right. Oh, I'm happy that you're here. Thank you for being here. You see, I did that. It was a skill I recently learned.
Well done, boss.
Thank you for coming.
Crackerjack job again, boss.
I'll tell you what. I'm going to tie both of you up. And try to get out in 15 seconds. And if you can do that, we'll give one of you to charity.
All right.
Wow. I think you may have misunderstood some of the earlier So All performance right, so reviews.
Performance
so
reviews.
Right. So in your case, very unique case, one employee, one boss. I'm not sure about that. We can maybe return to that. But just in general, they're very useful. But people often mess them up. So the problem I think that most leaders do is they only hold it once a year. So the annual performance review is the most common.
That's a long time.
It's a long time.
And you'd be so stressed out, too, wouldn't you?
Exactly. I mean, there are a few problems with that. So one is employees derive a lot of motivation from receiving feedback. And so performance reviews are, you know, the quintessential form of feedback that they receive. Mm-hmm. So once a year is not enough. Also, the people doing the performance reviews often fall victim to what's known as the recency bias. So you have a whole year of performance, but if somebody did something amazing in the last 2 or 3 weeks leading up to the performance review, the boss is often, you know, anchoring on that to the point where they're assuming that that's representative of the whole year of performance when it may just be this one account.
Whereas the person's been great all year, but just didn't do a lot monthly.
Exactly. Yeah. So there are a lot of problems with that. Mm-hmm. And also, people just need more. They need to get back on track earlier if they have things going on. So the research I'm aware of suggests, you know, somewhere between once a month and once a quarter is kind of an appropriate time frame to deliver feedback to employees.
Mm-hmm. So should she be posting notices on her refrigerator that the employee reviews?
Yeah, should I do that? Should I just turn from where I stand on my treadmill?
Yeah, I mean, you have a lot of ways to communicate away.
Wendell,
yeah.
your employee performance review is coming up soon.
So please fill out the self-evaluation form, right?
Do they do a self-evaluation form?
What I would recommend, so I'd say it's useful in the context of what's known as a 360 evaluation. So you may have heard of these where you get one target person being evaluated. So let's say, well, your example again is too unique to really talk about.
Worse for Wendell.
Yeah. Right. It would be Wendell
and you, basically. But typically in a larger organization, you would want the focal employee to fill out the survey about themselves, so their own self-perceptions, how they're doing on various dimensions. You'd want their boss or bosses to fill out the same questions about them.
That would be me and me.
Yeah. Their peers, their subordinates, get all that information presented to them at the aggregate level. You probably don't want to reveal people's identities necessarily.
What does that mean, aggregate level?
So if, you know, five people are rating somebody on a dimension, you average those five scores rather than just say, so-and-so said you were awful.
Sort of like those meta studies we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So that could be really useful. And it also helps start a conversation because you don't have to be the one to always say, you know, I think you're doing poorly in these areas. Like, let's just look at the numbers. You know, your subordinates
Although,
think this about
Paul's
you.
Obviously, in Paul's case, it's like... Right. It's pretty clear where all the numbers are coming
from.
Right.
Yeah. So the anonymous aspect is not going to work.
I've averaged.
Yeah, I'd like to keep you, Wendell, but I've been getting a lot of pressure from upstairs. it's all I can do to protect your job year after year.
Right. Yeah, I've thrown myself between you and disaster over and over again here at our company. Coopers, you're next. I just think it's weird that Pricewaterhouse would hire people that weren't accountants.
Well, I mean, it's a massive organization. They need lots of support staff.
I was trying to tell her that.
They need support staff?
Yes.
So there's the one guy who's writing the numbers on the accountant sheet, and then there's a guy who hands him the pen. Is that the support staff?
No, there's all kinds of things.
Here you are, sir. Here's another pen.
No.
Damn it, Coopers. Quickly with the pens. Quickly.
I think your misapprehensions about what goes into being an accounting firm might in some ways be related to some of the other business problems that we were talking about earlier on this show.
How many shirts were sold, Coopers? 100, sir. Then why is she out $50?
All right, one last question. How bad does an employee have to be before you should fire them?
Ooh, well, that's a really important question, because what often happens is leaders, that's one of the most painful, awkward,
and Wendell, I'm not talking
things.
About you.
This is the hypothetical employee in
the
organization.
Just on the front door.
One employee, right.
I'm not even going to, you know.
Change the locks,
I got to change the locks. Yeah. You know, he knows where I sleep.
Well, so... This is that's all
I
it sounds
right
like it's true.
The treadmill.
Right. So an employee has to be pretty bad, but I would say you can be bad in a number of ways, and some of them are worse than others. So you can be like a cancer on the culture. That seems like it's particularly bad, right? Because that can
if
vary.
You're some kind of backbiting.
Okay, wouldn't that be time to impeach?
Yeah.
I think so. I'm thinking of somebody.
Yeah, I don't know who.
Yeah.
Could be almost anybody.
So if they're cancer to the culture,
I can tell you who.
That's one way. if it's like a skill deficit or a performance deficit,
deficit.
Yeah. So maybe Wendell or
shouldn't
hypothetical
you have noticed
employees.
That when you hired him, when you had him build the bicycle, shouldn't you have noticed the skill deficit?
Possibly, right? Yeah. And so that gets back to kind of recruitment and socialization issues that we didn't really talk about, but that I think are really relevant.
But deficits
to this
can
as
emerge
well.
Over time. You can start saying oh, we're asking him to do a lot of this, and he's just not doing it.
So I think the key thing is, if you notice a problem that could eventually one day lead to them being fired, you want to address it as quickly as possible. That's the thing I think bosses wait too long to do. They see something, and because it's just an awkward conversation or they think it will get better naturally, they don't address it, and then it gets worse. It may affect other people. Yeah.
Okay,
and
you know what
so
I do? This is what I do. This is not good.
Okay.
But I say stuff like, I'm not good at addressing things directly. So I might say to an employee, I knew a person once who didn't really fold the T-shirts neatly and quickly. It would be hard for me to say.
Wow. And is that where that ends?
No,
because,
you know.
Because that's
no,
almost like be, mobster yeah. talk there, if it ended with, and that person met with a tragic accident.
No, it's not like that.
Because it sounds like a mob threat.
Yeah, I was just saying, you know. Oh. And eventually they got fired. That's what I know a person that didn't fold the T-shirts neatly and quickly.
She sleeps with the fishes.
And eventually they lost their job. That's how I would say it.
Is that an effective...
No. I mean, no. There's no way to spin
it's
that.
It's a little thuggish.
Is it that thuggish?
Yeah, it's like, hey, not for nothing. I love the job you're doing, but I knew somebody who didn't fold their T-shirts well. And, the head's in one corner of the football field and the body's in another.
You're going in entirely another direction.
Well,
there's a message
that comes across,
though.
There's
nothing thuggish about me at all, although I am one belt away from a black belt.
There you go.
But there's nothing thuggish about me.
You've got pecs of steel, you're one belt away from a black belt, and you make veiled threats to employees.
It's hard for me to say, like, oh, you shouldn't do that. Instead, what I do is I think of an example of someone else who did it. And
is that a good tactic? That's not thuggish.
It's not the best tactic. I would say you want to express compassion, whatever that means in the context, and then but also just being very direct.
Oh, you poor thing, you didn't do a good job folding these T-shirts.
Right. Well, transition into specifically what the problem is, because I think employees, they do crave feedback, and not just positive feedback. They crave constructive criticism.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Most employees want to do a good job, and direct feedback isn't offensive. It's not. Yeah. I don't think it's offensive to say, I noticed this in the report you produce. You know, switch this up next time because for this reason X, Y, and Z.
Okay. No. You know what I do? here's something that I do is I'll say, we need these boxes moved over here, but if you don't feel like doing it, don't.
How's that?
Well, I mean, sorry, my first reaction was to laugh. So, so
you'd be fired for that.
Yeah, I think so. As the boss, I mean, you need to be able to give orders that have some meaning behind it. If you say something and there are no consequences to not doing it, or it's not taken seriously, you're not going to be able to predict the behavior of the person you're asking, and that's going to be a problem. So they need to be able to predict some of your behaviors. And
it sounds very similar to parenting.
Yeah. Exactly. I think that's a nice parallel for many leadership traits, you know?
Yeah.
One thing that can kind of help clarify some of these uncertainties or ambiguities or communication issues, and this is something that's useful up front when you hire someone, is the idea of a user manual for yourself. So we often think of, a TV comes with a user manual, a refrigerator, but humans actually can produce user manuals about how to work with yourself. So let's say you have a new employee, you want to help streamline the process of onboarding them. You could create a one-page document that basically says, here is the best way to work with me. Here's when you'll find me at my worst. Here are some quirks that it may take some time for you to figure out, but let me just tell you about them up front.
Uh-huh.
Here's the best way to communicate with me. Things like this. Uh-huh. If you can just give that to someone up front as part of the socialization process, then you get in, then maybe you tell your employee, if you do have this more indirect way of communicating, you could include that in your user manual.
Just so you know, I'm going to communicate with you indirectly.
I may speak, in the third person, but I'm really speaking, about you.
Making a user manual sounds weird, because then the next thing you do is you have employees calling customer service, figure out how to talk to you.
Yeah, and then,
But in that case, you'd answer the call in that case.
No, she'd outsource it to India.
Good.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Anisich, for giving us the tools to be bossy in the right way. And Paula, based on what you've just heard, what advice can you give our listeners about how to manage your many, many employees?
Hey, Kristen Webb, can I have a little social hierarchy music to underscore this? It's not really advice. It's a summary of what I've learned. Perfect. I learned that I really have done everything wrong with my small staff. If I had it to do again, I'd do it differently. I'd be more direct. Wendell, welcome to my company, Lipstick Nancy Incorporated. Our shared goal is to sell these thousands of T-shirts without me losing my car. It's time for our first employee review. So far, you're doing very well. I've written you a kind of user manual for me as a boss. I'm not always direct. My office hours are all day. I'm 3 feet away from you. Hey, I'm over here. Time for another employee review. You're not very observant. Now, it's time for our first employee retreat. Let's go into the kitchen. Okay, turn around. Now fall backwards. Now get up. The truth is, you can't really count on me to catch you. If that doesn't work for you, they're hiring people to do absolutely anything over at PricewaterhouseCooper.
All right, Dr. Eric Anisich is Assistant Professor of Management and Organization at USC's Marshall School of Business. Thank you so much for being on the show, Doc.
Fantastic. Thank you.
When we come back, a Thomas Coyne update. Is he the whistleblower? We'll find out. That's coming up right after this. The cat of the week is Mabel from Green Bank, West Virginia.
Next in line.
Hey, I see that you have the fun-sized Butterfingers in the bag, but do you have the medium-sized ones?
Yeah, we got a new box right here.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah.
All right, cool. What do I owe you?
That's $2.75.
All right, terrific.
Out of five?
Of all the things that need to change, there are many. In the Butterfinger recipe, there weren't any. Can't provide equal opportunity? That's lunacy. Anyone can see. Can't they address that deep regret instead of just fucking with my chocolate? Some things need to change. Some things need to change. But not my Butterfingers. But not my Butterfingers. Some things need to change. Yep. Some things need to change. Yep. But not my Butterfingers. Nope. But not my Butterfingers. What the fuck is this?
I'm sorry?
There's something wrong with this. What's the expiration date on this?
Ma'am, those came in this morning.
Well, there's something wrong with them. Oh my God. New improved recipe.
I'm sorry?
I'll miss a crispity, crunchity fun size, but what are you thinking? Wouldn't it have been wise? Consider my sister, consider my brother. Stop the gun violence, stop shooting one another. Cruelty to the transgender. I don't get it. It's such a mind bender. That needs a correction, but Butterfingers don't need a new direction. Change our type of fuel. Make a powerful public school. And if we don't let love rule, we're done. Some things need to change. Some things need to change. But not my Butterfingers. But not my Butterfingers. But not my Butterfingers. But not my Butterfingers.
Please.
It's 2019. But not my Butterfingers. Skip the meat and eat some greens. Put down your
Is, in case you don't know. WPAU, home of the hits, that is Paula Poundstone's that's Paula Poundstone's new rap single, Not My Butterfinger, burning up our charts, number one for the fourth week in a row. It's available on Spotify and everywhere you can listen to music. So get it on iTunes, get it on Apple Music, just go get it.
It's sweeping the nation.
It sure is.
You know what I just realized?
What's that?
I have more employees.
I thought you did too.
Yeah.
You're sitting surrounded by them.
I'm like, wait a minute. I have Tony Anita Hall. Yeah. I have Tyler, who I keep calling Ryan because I forgot to welcome him to the family.
Yeah.
People always do that. They say our company is like a family. That's a frightening idea.
Yeah, that's quite an idea.
Yeah. No one ever does that when they have a kid. They never go, welcome to the company.
Yeah, you've got a lot of employees.
Yeah, I do. I have a bunch of employees.
You're surrounded by them.
Captain Crinkle thinks I'm her boss. I love that.
Well, technically, I mean, it's not quite a boss-employee relation, but technically, yes, she does work for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. This is really coming wide open here to this.
So if you wanted to have uniforms, you
could. I
have
a huge company. Oh, I want uniforms.
You know, and the reason I bring that up is because I was looking over Eric's shoulder during that interview, and when uniforms came up, Tony Anita Hull really perked up when we started talking about the coveralls with the name tag on it. Tony, is that right? You would want one of those.
Absolutely.
See?
Oh, man. I'm loving this. Yeah, we're getting uniforms.
Right, because Bonnie's idea was like, well, I'll just get one for Tony. But my
No.
Is,
the whole idea of
it's
uniforms.
It's not a uniform if yeah. we're all not wearing.
Yeah, then it's just a bizarre outfit.
And Tony's making a cosplay choice that is kind of weird.
Yeah, no. Everyone's going to have a uniform. I can't wait to tell Wendell. He's going to love this.
All right, Paula, so we have a Thomas coin update.
Oh, thank goodness. He has not been seen.
He has not been seen. And to remind everybody, way back a year ago, episode 3, we had this survivalist booked on the show to come tell us how to survive a bear attack.
Yeah.
And he didn't make it.
Or know what to do if you encounter a bear.
Well, one would...
Well, we were hoping you could avoid the attack,
yes,
Adam. That
okay.
was the idea.
Okay.
You know
right.
how you survive a bear attack?
You don't.
Ah! Well, yeah, you scream.
We'll never know because he didn't show up. Apparently, you know, he could survive bears, but not Miranda Street.
Yeah.
And so, survivalist Thomas Coin, we've kind of launched a worldwide harebrained manhunt for him.
It's not harebrained in any way. It's a dragnet. We've thrown a dragnet across the entire globe.
I question your use of the term dragnet because
we're trying to find.
What we've asked listeners to do is flag down and put pins on our map to let us know places where Thomas Coin currently isn't.
That's exactly what Bill Barr is doing right now. He's going around the world looking for Thomas Coin.
It's you know what
he's and Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani is also part of the Thomas Coin search.
Quite a team there.
Yeah.
So he hasn't been seen in a lot of places. Against my better judgment, I'm going to read all these.
On our Facebook page,
we have an interactive map. You can put a pin in there and say, hey, Thomas Coin's not here. Which I want to point out again, if he's not there when you first look, he could go there later.
Yeah. Well,
there's a certain temporal component to this that
backup.
We haven't addressed.
That's why you need backup.
Okay,
that's why we
got
to work as a team, people.
Right. If you see a pin on the map, you might want to go verify because it's been a while and maybe he's there now. So,
yeah.
There you go.
You go this way, I'll go that way. We'll find him.
Right. So, listener Jay Sheslow wrote, looked everywhere and asked for Thomas Coin, and he's not here at the He's Not Here legendary college bar in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Go Tar Heels.
Oh, well, thank you.
Because that's just the kind of thinking that Thomas Coin might employ, being
he's a devious guy.
I'll hide at the He's Not Here bar.
Peter McClelland had this thoughtful observation. I feel the search has been going all wrong. He is a survivalist and not likely to be spending a lot of time in civilization where most of the search has been. My family and I have traversed the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness in Minnesota, America's most popular wilderness, from August 5th through 11th. We covered 60 miles of lakes and portages is a great idea and never saw a sign of Thomas Coin in all that time and distance.
Well,
fantastic work, Peter.
That.
Thank you.
Yeah.
To your entire family.
Yeah, thank you for your service. Neil Sato wrote, I would like to confirm that Thomas Coin is not in the lunchroom of NASA's Katherine Johnson Independent Verification and Validation Facility in Fairmont, West Virginia at this time, August 9th at 8:15 a.m.
Fuck, I thought for sure.
That he would be there and then?
Oh, my God.
I feel like these are proving my point for me.
What do you mean?
Well,
I thought for sure he was going to be there.
No, you didn't.
I did. That's exactly where I had narrowed him down to. You haven't seen the wall in my bedroom/office.
I bet it looks like a beautiful mind in there.
I've got you know, the yarn things going.
That's what I'm saying.
It's unbelievable.
Newspaper clippings.
Yeah. I am
hair samples.
This close, Adam, to nailing this. Another listener is on to you, Adam.
What?
He writes, the real reason why Adam doesn't like your search method is because either he is working with Thomas Coin and
for
is
God's
scared
sake.
That your strategy is too good, or he is Thomas Coin in disguise. He doesn't like your simple sample dialogue because he doesn't want more listeners who can look for coin. Believe me, I'm right. Best regards, listener Andrew Slomchick.
Well, listen here, listener Slomchick. You're barking up the wrong tree, and you don't want to be sniffing around that tree anyway, if you know what I mean.
No!
I'm not Thomas Coin, and that's not the reason I have an objection to this. It's because it's methodologically unsound.
No, like if you were Thomas Coin, you would just say it.
Maybe you're Thomas Coin.
I'm not Thomas Coin.
Yeah, that's what he would say. So, Paula, you've been speaking of travel, traveling a lot, and you ran into an old friend the other day.
I was at a show the other day.
Uh-huh.
It might have been Ridgefield, Connecticut, and a guy came up to me and he said, do you remember my sister, Missy Haswell?
Really?
And I was like, oh my God, I haven't heard Missy. The last time I remember is maybe the second, third, fourth grade.
But you
maybe.
Totally remembered her.
I absolutely remember her. She had a beautiful blonde braid. I can remember the dress that, well, I'm sure she had more than one dress, but I remember a specific dress. I think she sat like in front of me in one of our elementary school years. It was Missy Haswell's brother.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of amazing. You know, I've been back in contact with an old school friend, too, because he's in the news these days. Can I bring this up apropos
of a friend that's in the news?
Yes.
Is it Bill Barr?
It's surprisingly close.
Really?
I went to school.
Mrs. Barr?
No, I was friends in high school, not Mrs. Barr, with this kid named Mark Zaid.
And who's he?
Well, right now,
he
is one of the two lawyers of both of the whistleblowing the whistle on the Trump organization. He's
really?
Mark's on TV all the time. He's this ultra, you know, he's for clean governance, always has been, bipartisan. Lawyers on the news all the time now.
I haven't seen him, but you still don't know who the whistleblower is. You know the lawyer.
He hasn't told. No,
whistleblower. He's not going to tell you because that's not.
No, he's an ethical lawyer.
I have a theory, by the way.
What?
That it's Missy Haswell.
Why would it be Missy Haswell?
I don't know. There's just everything about her that seems to
fit the profile.
Well, I really
hope it's not now that we've brought up her name on the show.
Oh, shit. I hope I haven't endangered
the life.
You
blew her cover, Missy. Run!
She doesn't have a braid. She doesn't have a braid.
You know, this
that was an inaccurate description. She never wears a dress.
She probably doesn't anymore.
She outgrew that dress. Don't look for her in that dress.
Okay. Yeah, that's great.
You know, I was thinking that our house band, Kristen Webb, who is playing the contra bassoon this week, has been fantastic.
Remarkably.
But it would be great to have on one of the whistleblowers as the house band.
You do realize that that's not actual whistles involved
mean?
With the whistleblower.
No.
There's no real whistles.
Yes, there is.
No, you don't blow a whistle. It's a figure of speech.
I don't know. What do you mean?
Well, it's like what you name. It's what you've named that thing. Because
what's the thing?
The
Missy Haswell.
The act of seeing some injustice and going to a third party to mm-hmm. you know to tell
it's
them.
Called whistleblowing because they blow the whistle.
There's no real
when
whistle.
When they see it, they put a whistle in their mouth. They go.
Do you like the Carpenters?
I love the Carpenters.
Do you feel like they build shelves as well as sang music?
They might have. We don't know that they didn't.
They're not Carpenters. It's a name.
Why
it's a
would
metaphor.
You bring up the Carpenters?
I don't know, because I'm stressed. This show is stressful for me. It's very stressful.
Wow. I can't believe you just brought up the Carpenters from
I can't
out of
believe
nowhere.
You framed your old grade school friend
I'm
as a whistleblower.
Well, you're letting her off the hook with the Carpenters. Do you think it could only be one Carpenter now, right? Because one of them died, so it's the other one. You know what he's doing? He's contacting the Congress through his lawyer, Mark Zaid.
When all this is over and the smoke clears and Mark can leave Washington, he'd be a great guest on this show.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mark, if you're listening, and I know you're not, think about it.
No, that would be great. I maybe he doesn't have as many demands as Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks wants pettifors.
He can have pettifors as far as I'm concerned.
That reminds me.
Oh, look at this.
Pettifors. I am French Trump.
It's French Trump. Welcome back to our
French
show.
French Trump.
Remarkable physical
it.
Resemblance to Mrs. Culpepper.
I did not do it. I did do it. It is okay to do it, and I will do it again. Look what he did.
Wow.
It's I, French Trump.
With a French accent, that almost sounds like
Tom Hanks wants petted cats.
Tom Hanks wants petted cats?
Petted cats.
He petted cats.
Petted cats.
What's petted cats mean?
It's a translation, a French translation for petit fours.
Cats is not a translation for fours, French Trump.
Un, deux, trois, cats.
Oh, cat. Oh, wow. I'm sorry. I was thrown off by your extremely realistic accent.
Un, deux, trois, quatre. And then, I am French Trump. I will make crepe Suzette out of Joe Biden. And Nancy Pelosi, do not try to impeach me. I will not stand for impeachment.
Impeachment.
Impeachment. We will not have petty cats.
Petty cats, I get it
petty
now.
Petty cats, Tom Hanks.
I really...
Do not truckle to Tom Hanks.
I want to move on.
I have sent Bill Barr all around the world to do investigations of Joe Biden.
I have to say,
I will make crepe Suzette's of Joe Biden.
How do you make
I will make French toast of Joe Biden.
Now, I know French people don't call it French toast.
No, they do call it French toast. No,
they probably call it toast.
You know nothing, Adam Felbert. I will truckle to you no more, Adam Felbert. I am French Trump.
You're a belligerent
I am French Trump.
Trump. What do you call French fries, French Trump?
Freedom fries, of course. Francois fries. All right. I will not be impeached because I cannot sustain impeachment.
Can I talk
to French
Paula?
Trump. You would like to speak to Miss Spenston?
If she's available.
Not now.
How about Mrs. Culpepper?
Miss Culpepper is not available at this time. I don't know why you all truckle to Tom Hanks so. Yes, Adam. Adam, can I help you?
Yeah, Paula, while you were gone, this craziest shit happened. Anyway,
Was French Trump here?
He was. He always seems to show up just as you leave. He's like, you're Snuffleupagus. All right, we'll be back right after this. According to climate scientists, we have 10 years and 12 weeks until the Earth begins to become uninhabitable.
Hello, my name is Tusk Henderson, and I am an outdoorsman.
Are you looking for a new comedy podcast? This month's episode of Beef and Dairy Network podcast has as its guest the wonderful Nick Offerman, playing the part of Tusk Henderson, adventurer and outdoorsman.
Think about fitting yourself, a month's worth of provisions, and a half-ton cow into a kayak.
So if you've never listened to the show before, this might be a good place to start.
I string a bowstring between her horn tips, and I can fire a spear off the top of her head. And took in some very delicious cod.
So, if you're after a new comedy podcast, why not try the Beef and Dairy Network from Maximum Fun? Download it now!
You flip a cow upside down, they make an excellent toboggan.
We are the hosts of My Brother and Me, and now, nearly 10 years into our podcast, the secret can be revealed. All the clues are in place, and the world's greatest treasure hunt can now begin.
Embedded in each episode of My Brother and Me is a micro clue that will lead you to 14 precious gemstones all around this big, beautiful blue world of ours.
So start combing through the episodes. Let's say starting at episode 101 on.
Yeah, the early episodes are pretty problematic, so there's no clues in those episodes.
No, not at all.
The better ones, the good ones, clues ahoy.
Listen to every episode repeatedly in sequence. Laugh if you must, but mainly get all the great clues. My Brother and Me, it's an advice show, kind of, but a treasure hunt mainly. Anywhere you find podcasts or treasure maps, My Brother and Me, the hunt is on.
On this day in unremarkable history, Daniel Boone said, "It's a raccoon hat. How does it look? Be honest. If it looks stupid, I'll take it off."
Welcome back, all you nobodies. And remember, starting on October 29th, our show drops on Tuesdays instead of Mondays, and every Tuesday thereafter. All right, Paula, you know how much I love this part of the show.
Oh, you're really going to love this, Adam.
Okay, I was going to ask you if you had any messages for our fans.
I do.
Okay.
Adam, I know you've often been concerned that when I encourage our listeners to spread the word about Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, I've mostly suggested a simple sample dialogue directed toward only one person at a time.
Adam has been very concerned about that.
And
that's me, French Pence.
Hello, French Pants. You did it. Look at his phone calls. Although you're often just
you
playing...
You are so right, French Trump.
Although you're often just plain
boss.
Wrong, Adam. I am the boss.
Friend of mine.
Although you're often...
unimpeachable. Fan Trump.
You can be impeached too. Although you're often just plain wrong, Adam, I've recently given some consideration to your objection and tried to propose a simple sample dialogue that will be heard by a larger audience.
Really?
You like that, don't you?
Thank you.
Certainly.
Wow, I feel like
pleasure.
I'm being heard.
Yeah.
I feel like we need Eric back here because like when an employee feels like they're being heard by the boss, it changes everything.
Yeah.
It's like the sun just came out for me.
Now we're on the same team with our goal.
Yeah.
With our intrinsic goal.
Oh, absolutely. Let's do this, Paula. Let's appeal to a lot of listeners.
All right, here it is.
Hurrah.
Simple dialogue. Try this. Museum docent. Thank you for coming to the Museum of Natural History. If I could have you all step over this way. Terrific. And feel free to raise your hand if you have any questions. So let's begin. The Neanderthals lived in family groups. Yes? Question in the back? Listener. Well, it's not a question. It's a comment. I just want to say that I recently shared with my family that I listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast. I wanted to let them know for quite a while, but it can be an awkward conversation. See, Adam?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Museum docent. Thank you. The Neanderthals had complex social lives, so scientists believed that they must have been able to talk to each other. Yes, I see a hand up. Listener. Penn Jillette was a guest on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast. Tell her really can talk. Museum docent. Thank you. Neanderthals evolved in Europe and Asia.
This isn't fair.
Yes, you had your hand up? Listener, Adam and Paula thought they were doing very well in Moldova, but it turns out they read the podcast charts wrong. They have like one listener there, even though they did an episode where they sampled the Moldovan dish Mamaliga, which was such a funny episode. They could easily tell it apart from Fruit Loops, even with bags over their heads. Museum docent. Excellent. Thank you. As you can see from these replicas, Neanderthals had large noses, strong double-arched brow ridges, and short, stocky bodies. Yes. Listener, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast listeners, don't really know what Mrs. Culpepper looks like. She does wear a ruby sateen dress, though, which
not really.
Tom Hanks hates. He won't even do the show if she wears it. He also wants them to provide pettifors, which reminds me, French Trump is hysterical. Museum docent, thank you. It is likely that Neanderthals used pigment to decorate or camouflage their bodies.
God.
Yes, you, ma'am, with your hand up. Listener, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast, once had a tattoo artist and body piercer on. Oh, my God, it was funny. Museum docent, ma'am, I think the other people enjoying the museum tour would appreciate it if you didn't interrupt to tell about Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone anymore. Listener, the comedy podcast? Museum docent, yes.
Oh, my God.
Museum guest one, let the comedy podcast listener talk. Museum guest two, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast sounds great. Museum guest three, if Neanderthals hadn't gone extinct, I'll bet they would have listened to that show. Museum guest four, I'm gonna listen. Thanks for telling us. Museum guest five, does Mrs. Culpepper have a husband?
Wow.
So that, you see, Adam,
explain to me again how this is more inclusive and more likely that...
Because she's talking to a whole group of people at the museum.
Right, but you've scripted out responses that are positive that they would all have to read.
No, they don't have to read them. Adam, this is simple, simple dialogue.
Yeah,
I can't guarantee what the responses will be.
I can guarantee that this will never happen.
This is
no better than any of the other ones. I mean, you got me on the team, and then you had me kick the football, and you pulled it away.
Adam, I think it's time for another employee review.
Oh, no. I'll work harder, Paula. As if that's possible. All right, nobodies. Remember, our email address again is nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com.
And you can find me and Adam on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And you can find my remarkably soft tri-polyblend t-shirts with the self-portrait on the left breast and the memorable quote on the back at paulapoundstone.com.
Just think of tri-poly as being within quotes. That's our show, everybody. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam Felber. Produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Hull. Technical direction by Ray Horseman and mixing by Anthony Alfaro. Special thanks to tonight's house band, Kristen Webb. Thank you so much. Special thanks to our guest, Dr. Eric Anisich. Security muscle provided by Tyler Knives Burke.
Transcription services for the show provided by TranscribeMe. For your special Paula Poundstone discount, use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at TranscribeMe.com.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
All right, things that I think I'm good at are keeping the show organized, staying on task. I think I have some challenges in terms of patience with some of the other employees, including the boss at times. But I think overall, it's been a very strong quarter for me.
Well, let me just go over what your coworkers have said.
Okay.
Now, this is an amalgamation. I'm not going to give names.
Okay. This is what all the people that higher up say?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Tony Anita Hall, for example, said...
Well, you just used her name.
Oh, okay.
What, tell me what she said, Anita.
No. It doesn't seem
now
right.
I really want to know.
Now that I've... Whistleblower Tony Anita Hall says...
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.